part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time. I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time.
Hi, how you doing, man?
I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah, I'm groovy. All good. Just petrol exhausted and stuff.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
That's not your fault. It's just life.
Just the way it goes, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Well, shall we begin our little chat?
Let's do it, yeah.
Cool. Well, welcome to the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I have a very special guest on the line. Marcus Pattern is on the line, right? Did I pronounce that all correctly?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay.
Nice. Great. I got the name right. Thank you so much. I have a tendency for screwing up people's names. If you've ever listened to the podcast before, it is a thing I do. I try my best. I'm sorry. I should probably confirm with people before they come on. But Marcus, thank you for having an easy name for me to pronounce. You have a comic out called Here Comes the Dragon Punch, right?
I do indeed. Yes, that's correct.
Nice. And it is now available. What are the outlets where people can go? Is it, it's on Webtoons?
Yes. It's basically, if you want to get, like, the plan is that I release chapters on Webtoons, my art station, and via Substack. If you want to support the book and help it and get, like, it before it goes to public and everything, and want to see some behind the scenes shenanigans, I'm also running a Patreon on it as well, where basically, like, you'll get the issue before everyone else. So that's Marcus Pattern. That's patreon.com/Marcus Pattern, and you'll get the entire first issue, and depending on when this goes out, when you hear it, issue two should be up by the end of this week.
Oh, nice.
Which is the 17th. So, yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. So, Webtoons, your Patreon. Do you have, like, a direct website for yourself or anything like that people can find you?
I was looking at it and I was thinking, oh, maybe. And then, I it's just so much. So much hassle. I was like, I can't be bothered with that noise now.
Well, like, you're busy creating the book, I guess. So I guess Webtoons is probably the best place, because, I mean, I clicked on the Webtoons link and it looked like some stuff was already up on there, right?
The first four chapters, the first five, isn't it? Right. The first issue is up on Webtoons at the moment. Depending how quickly I can get everything turned around, first chapter of issue two should be up there on there now. I do have a physical copy of issue one with bits of chapter two in it, which you can get via my Etsy if you
wanted to
see a physical copy of it.
Nice. And you have a newsletter. How do people sign up for your newsletter?
Marcus Pattern Substack, I think.
Gotcha. Okay, great. Well, thanks for coming on. And you're in the UK, right?
I most certainly am.
I did not know that when we were scheduling, and then when I had to move stuff around, as I sometimes do, because it is called Part-Time Fanboy and I have a family and stuff like that and a job, and sometimes things intrude. So I always apologize to guests for sometimes having to reschedule, but I realized, I'm like, oh, he's way ahead of me, like, time-wise, like, when we were... So, where are you in the UK?
I can see the future. It doesn't get any better.
No, it definitely doesn't look like it's going to either. But anyway, stop with the negativity. Whereabouts are you located in the UK?
London.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, cool. All right. Well, let's talk about your comic, because, I mean, I think you and I may be simpatico on a couple of things. I'm assuming that you like Naruto.
I did. I like the. I never read the manga. I only watched the
anime.
Anime.
Uh-huh.
Basically, the deal where that was, like, over here we had something called HMV, and they had like cheap Naruto DVDs and stuff. So that's how I got into it.
Uh-huh.
And then Amazon basically crushed that company with its you know, crush the company. So, and then, so I had no way of getting hold of it. It's because of, so I liked what I saw, I then, but not so much that I ran out to get, and then so there's a lot of it as well. So I was like, oh, yeah. Like I want to watch like the last episode just for like, can I swear on this, by the way?
Sure. Yeah.
I wanted to watch for shits and giggles and stuff. I was like, can't be bothered to sign up for Country Roll, and because, you know, I'm an old man and I have so many streaming services as well. So that, you know, so I from what I saw, I did.
Well, I just say that because, I mean, this seems to me, I really like your drawing style. Like, I should say that. I really like different it looks from like anything else. And that's sort of the thing, like when you got in touch with me, I was like, I like this, the way this guy draws. Like, I like his style. I like the way you kind of like draw your heads. But I also feel that it is very much like manga inspired, right? Or anime inspired. And that's why I brought up Naruto, because I watched, I think not the whole first series before it became Shippuden, but that was during a time where my daughter was like a baby. So like in the mornings I would get up, go into my garage, and I had like this cheap ass elliptical thing and a DVD player. And I would put like Naruto DVDs that I got off of eBay, because it wasn't even the US at the time. And then I would put them on in there and watch while I was on the elliptical. And I just fell in love with that series, just because it kept me entertained in the early mornings before my daughter woke up, you know. So Naruto has a soft spot in my heart for that reason. But I was reading, when I was looking at and reading your book, I was like, there's got to be like a Naruto or anime manga sort of like inspiration, right? Like, I mean, I would imagine, I'm not saying that you're copying them, but it did remind me of like Naruto a bit.
I mean, I'm not copying Naruto, but like, if you were to say like this guy is cribbing from, yeah, that wouldn't be too inaccurate, you know.
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, right? There's nothing wrong with being inspired by anime manga. I mean, like half the artists and, you know, a lot of the original Image creators were inspired by manga and anime, right? So there's nothing.
I am of that age too. Like, you know, if you were to cut me open, it'd be anime manga, and then it would be like a little Joe Maniera trying to come out, please, you know. So it runs deep. Like, I was listening to your last podcast you put up with the guy who's got the espionage thing coming out, and he's mentioning Ghost in the Shell, and like that original anime is just like, that's just such a part of my soul. And so
we were talking about Ghost in the Shell, I think, on that last one. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's funny how many different, I mean, it's like everything. Like, I'm always interested in discovering where people's tastes come from, like what they were, first inspired by when they were reading comics or getting into comics. Like I'm old enough that, like, for me, it was like John Byrne, like George Perez, stuff like that. Like, that's the stuff that I love. Like the early Teen Titans, like John Byrne's Fantastic Four run, even though, you know, he's kind of said some dickish things in the past, you know what I mean? But so
unprompted dickish things too.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not gonna drop the N-bomb on your podcast for no apparent reason.
Yeah. Oh, did he do that? I did not know that.
I don't think he verbalized it, but he wrote it in a forum piece unprompted, you know.
Oh God. that just ruined my afternoon. It's like, yeah, well, it's unfortunate, because like John Byrne is one of those things that I'm just like, I can't quit. And that now to hear that, I'm just like, why? But let's ignore the troublesome things that inspired me to really love comics. How about like, what are some of the things?
I'm a Frank Miller fan. I can't say shit, man.
Oh, Frank Miller. Yeah, right. Like, that's interesting. So, I mean, was Frank Miller like one of the things that you first like gravitated to, like when you were first reading comics?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure exactly the timeline, but because like, I remember really not being seeing. I remember seeing Sin City all over the place. I mean, that's really not for me. I don't like that kind of cartoonish way you did it. And then some reason I was like, oh fuck, I'll just pick it up. And like, it was not the Big Fat Kill. What's the one that was a straightforward graphic novel that he did, where Dwight was helping the
I don't remember. I have not read all of the Sin City stuff, so I could not help you there. But suffice it to say that it seems to be like a Sin City thing that you picked up.
Yeah, Sin City. And as I tried getting back into, I didn't like Ronin when I read him. I might have been a bit too young for it, but I really wasn't fucking with 300 because I don't like Lynn Varley's color scheme. I do like Frank Miller. I just don't like any of the stuff he's ever created ever, and his personalities. I think Sin City and stuff is kind of a thing like brought the cartoony esqueness, like the grotesque cartoony esqueness into like, oh, I can do that and everything. So I think it was this, like how when cats of my age and stuff picked up like Sin City, like, oh, well, or just do Black Shadows and stuff, and have you asked me a question, or have I just started rambling about Frank Miller? I can't remember.
That, either way is fine. We're on a podcast, so the more that you talk, the more space we fill, and the more that we learn about you. I've rambled with other people about Frank Miller before, so that is not a problem. What about
Steve in the right direction?
Let's tell me a little bit about Here Comes the Dragon Punch. Like, why don't you just tell me what it is, what it's about, like what you want people to know about it?
So Here Comes the Dragon Punch is like the elevator pitch, as you say, is like an all ages kung fu fighting book with parkour and baking in it. The story revolves around Ash, August, and Omar, and their explorations in the world I've created, in which they learn how to harness their Ash and August certainly will learn to harness their inner dragon fang and become kung fu masters and stuff. And Omar's trying to uncover a conspiracy. That's why he's running away with that that parcel wrapped up and stuff. And that's kind of the first issue is kind of two stories split in half, and then so that's basically the first issue. Mm-hmm. And then from there it'll grow where it'll branch off. So like the next few issues will be basically how August learns to harness her dragon and learn to control her powers and her spoiler alerts. At the end of the first issue, she gets some dragon flame, which she didn't realize she had and stuff. And then, she'll be like learning how to fight basically and be competitive in it and stuff. And then Ash's story will be, why the dojo that he has been to for like a few years hasn't taught them how to harness their flame and everything, and they're just sitting there because they've been at the dojo, mm. but like the head teacher guy hasn't been teaching how to be the best kung fu master that they can be. One of the reasons why Omar left as well, because he realized that something dodgy was going on. And yeah, so that'll be the kind of the overarching story. Will be August learning how to be like cool at her job. Ash will be learning how can get a whole learn properly after being mistaught for so long, mm. and that will basically lead to the disintegration of the dojo and stuff. And then Omar will be doing whatever it is Omar's doing, because I definitely have a plot point for him that I've not rewritten 15 times because I can't figure it out. But there's definitely a plot line there.
I mean, so just to reiterate and let everybody know, I mean, you have like three main characters. One is named Ash, one is August, the other is Omar. And they are sort of like, I mean, you know, and pardon me if I'm just explaining, I'm just trying to use shorthand. I mean, they are sort of like ninja-like characters who are part of a school and they're learning. And basically what you just said is by the end of the first issue, or at least part of the first issue, one of the characters discovers that they have this ability that they didn't know that they could have. And it sounds like what you're going to be exploring is the why haven't they been taught that, how they come about learning that, and like all the discoveries that like about the school that will come about because of this, right?
Pretty much. Yes, for Ash, that's kind of the inciting incident for them. And it will also be the inciting incident for a couple of other characters who also attend the dojo. Just because like I've created this big kind of character roster list, so it's nice to be like, oh well, I can kind of dip here and expand and to have stuff. So like, so while Ash, Omar, and August are the main characters and stuff, they don't have to be. I can dip in other places and everything. So
gotcha.
So yeah, I should. So like the first issue of Ash and August basically starts with them going along having having a meal and some pizza stuff and noticing a rival clan member from the Yakuza clan, and they crash that clan's tournament, and the head teacher there demonstrates the dragon flame, which is like, and they're like, oh, this is so dope and cool. And Ash asks, well, why can't you do? No, August asks Ash why Ur can't do that and stuff, and that sets the alarm bells off in their mind. And why can't I do that? So yeah,
sure.
But it's you know, as you said, it's ninjas, it's kung fu, it's parkour, it's a lighter family kind of affair, because like the last couple books I did were really kind of hard, really dank and heavy and oppressive, and while I don't mind sitting in that headspace, gets on you after a while. So it was nice to think, well, I can flex my more comedic muscles and stuff.
Gotcha. Well, and the other two books, it was, what is it, 13 Shots of Whiskey and The Gateway, I think I saw.
Yeah,
that.
Thank you.
Nice.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Yeah. So 13 Shots of Whiskey came about because The Gateway failed to launch on Kickstarter. And I was so fucked off. I was like, well, I had to direct my energy into something. And I was like, oh, can I create a comic book in 7 weeks? Jim Rugg created a comic book in 7 weeks. If he can do it, so can I. And I did. And so the fuck you energy took me through the first issue of 13 Shots of Whiskey.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't enough to carry me through. Because like basically the first issue of 13 Shots of Whiskey was the first comic I'd done all by my lonesome, and I had learned a lot and stuff. And then I took everything I learned and all the, you know, the less than perfect things from the first issue, and I drove it into issue two. And then I thought, this is a really good book. I've done really, really well, and no one gave a flying fuck about it. I was like, huh. And then that really put the kibosh on issue three. It's like, because of why am I busting my butt to and for no one to really care? And then I also think it's also like because it's a constant learning process. I think I learned so much on issue two that to go to issue three was sort of kind of aggressive. Because I wasn't progressing to like, well, this is a natural progression for someone who is like amateur, semi-amateur to quasi-pro. To I should have taken the next step, and so I didn't. And then I suppose I should plug the next thing I did, which was a containment breach. I did a Lovecraftian sci-fi horror story for their volume four, which is going to be kickstarting soon.
An anthology?
An anthology book, yes. I've just rode home from work, so I can't remember everyone's name off the top of my head. But you know, I'm part of a thing on Discord called Comics Jam, and they did this anthology called The Containment Breach, and like I went to be on there and everything, and then I didn't realize they expected me to color it. I was like, but it's like I'd have to find a colorist. I was like, I don't really want to ask someone to color this for free.
Sure.
Because it's just a pure exposure thing. Like I don't mind exposing myself. I don't want to go, hi, you can color this really intricate artwork for free if you don't mind.
Sure.
If you don't mind. You know, it's like one of the things I've learned from being like doing comics on myself and doing and being in a band, you never should rely on anyone to do anything for you for free, because they won't do it for you. Kindness to your heart doesn't amount to anything. It's like, well, this would be a good learning experience for me to learn how to color and to learn, or, you know, basically. So like the progression I wasn't making in the third issue of 30 Shots of Whiskey, I made in the Containment Breach thing, which was only like 10 pages. Like, that's a lot to kind of like learn in like, oh, cool. So it's, you know, because coloring is, I like doing it now, but it is a motherfucker to do. So it's like, learning how I can basically skip steps here, what I do not here. So that's why, that is why. And I appreciate your commenting the artwork on Here Comes the Dragon Punch. But basically, that's me experimenting to like, how quickly can I do the pencil work and also color it like in as quickly as. So it's in terms of like a book, it's me experimenting on a 20 page book. So like, I'm glad you dig it, and I'm glad that the experimentation came out well. The experimentation has permeated into the second book to a point like I know what I want to do to basically jump forward and experiment differently in other pages. So it's been a fun experience in that regard.
Sure.
So, yeah.
No, basically, I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
Previous stuff. If you want my previous work, it's all up on Etsy. You can get the digital copy of The Gateway, which was the first book first full comic I did with a guy called Devin Ascott, a Lovecraftian horror set on a farm. Then there's 30 Shots of Whiskey, which are two standalone issues. And one's a Western, one's a crime noir. Containment Breach will be out on Kickstarter soon. And if you go to my art station, you will find a Marvel comic fanzine thing that I did, also to demonstrate my ability to draw and stuff. So
sure.
And that's all I've been here comes a Dragon Punch, which I'm all on board for, because I really enjoy drawing people kicking people in the head.
No, I mean,
and so, despite the language coming out of my gob, it's family friendly. There's only one swear word.
No, I mean, that's one of the things that I sort of, there was a couple of things there. First of all, like your Etsy, what is the name of the shop? What is the name? Is it Marcus Pattern? How can people search for your stuff?
I think it's either just Marcus Pattern or Marcus Pattern Draws. I think it's just Marcus Pattern.
Gotcha.
I found a check, so.
Gotcha. Okay, I just want people to be able to. And then, so that's some of the sort of things. It's interesting that you mentioned that it is experimentation. It seems to me like when I was looking at these pages that a lot of it's straight pencils, right? Like not inks, correct?
Yeah, pretty much.
Great. And then what are you coloring with?
I'm a digital artist, so like it's basically all done in Clip Studio. It's digital pencils, and then the reason why Ash and August are eating pizza at the beginning of it is because about 6 months ago I was doing a fan piece of Michelangelo from Teenage Mutant Turtles and Sakura from Street Fighter.
Oh, nice.
Just sitting eating pizza, but like I done like pencil and watercolor and on Clip Studio, and like I really liked the way that turned out, and it was quite a quick turnaround, and I thought, how quickly can I do this? So I did a two-page fan comic in which Ken from Street Fighter and Raphael from the Rise of the Mutant Ninja Turtles fought together, and I did that with pencils or digital pencils and digital watercolor, and I did a page in about an hour and a half. I thought, this is really good going. If I can keep this momentum up, I can do a comic really, really quickly. Because one of my main issues is I get bored quite quickly. So if I'm sitting here dwelling and and going over things, I'll just get lost in the weeds and like, well, this is boring, I'm going to throw this away. But if I can do it as quickly as humanly possible, then I won't be bored because I'll have finished it. And
yeah.
So like my initial plan was to try watercoloring it and stuff. And it didn't necessarily, it's really hard to control. Yeah. So my idea was to basically do digital pencils and then do digital watercolor. But like I wasn't getting the effect that I was after. It was kind of like, I don't know how in the Teenage Mutant Turtle fucking Street Fighter fan comic I managed to get it to work. Maybe it's a color palette I was choosing for my old comic. It just didn't work. And I was like, oh, I need more control than this. And like, you know, so there's difference between like I'm doing a rushing out a comic for like just for fan purposes. Like I intend to sell this. I probably should paint within the lines and stuff. So I was like, what can I do? What can I do? So like, basically I went back to my old route of just like, well, like I really like the flat color palette you get from Dave Stewart and Matt Hollingsworth and stuff. So I was like, if I do that, if I have it as flat as humanly possible, then it'll still look cool. And yeah, so it's basically like, I did experiment. I tried with watercolor, with digital watercolor. I tried with acrylics. I tried with all the other settings you got on there. I was like, nah, it's not really vibing for me. But yeah, so that's essentially, and then, yeah, so that's why the book, so yeah.
Nice. And no, then, so it's interesting to me that you, because I use Clip Studio Paint for myself. I'm actually trying to migrate over to Krita now because Krita's free. Right. And I mean,
are you on Clip Studio 2 or the first version?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Are you on Clip Studio 2 or the first version?
I'm on the first version, so
you won't need to be on subscription.
So I won't need to, or I will need to?
No, you won't. But you can. It's version 2.0. That's the subscription model. The one that the first version that we're using, you won't need to.
See, but
that's a one-off payment, and you've paid for it.
So that's the thing that I don't understand, because like I'm wondering at some point if support kind of like drops for that. You know what I'm
saying?
Yes,
they are going to stop updating and stop dropping. But like from what I can gather, there's not. I mean, which Clip Studio version do you have?
I would have to look it up on the. But I mean, I bought it years ago, like on disc, and like it stored it, and then just kept getting the updates, and that's one of the reasons why I loved it. I was like, you know, it wasn't like Photoshop. They were like charging me for every update or something like that again and again and again. And I was like, this is great. And it took me a long time a friend of mine had been recommending it for a long time. Right. And then, and then I finally was like, oh, I got to learn a new program or whatever. But then I started trying it out and I really liked it. I mean, I think it's a little overstuffed, right? Like as far as it does a lot of, you know, so is Photoshop. It's like, I think with any of these programs, you sort of have to focus on like what you need to do or what you want to do, and then kind of like try and ignore the rest of it because you can get easily overwhelmed, right? So that's the thing.
I found Clip Studio really intuitive though. Photoshop was always an uphill struggle, but Clip Studio to me was just basically like putting pen to paper. Like I really like the perspective rules, but then again, if you don't dig it, you don't dig it.
I dig it. I use it for everything that I do now. But like my thing is like, like when you go to their site and you're trying to figure out the subscription language or like for updates and stuff, it makes no sense. I'm like, wait, this is like a lifetime update. And then this is for two, but then three, I'm going to have to sign up for monthly. And it's like, how is it there? Whoever writes the language for their site is just a shithead. Like, I'm like, who is doing this? This is not a professional individual, because I have no idea.
That is my only issue, is like you go into the asset store, it's a case of like, it doesn't let you type in a search thing. Basically, like if you press, it does everything in like tags and stuff. It's just like, it's the most really like MS-DOS kind of jank and stuff, but the actual program itself is quite good. And so
I've tended to use it a lot, and mostly because of the stabilization tools, because I have a hard hand and you know, I can draw on paper okay and stuff like that. My inking suffers because of that, especially if I'm trying to use a brush and stuff. But you know, as far as like, you know, Photoshop did not have stabilization tools for the longest time. And I could not draw something with like a smooth line for the longest time. And it's because I press pretty hard. And so, but Krita, I went over to Krita recently just to, you know, mess around with the sketch. And I was like, oh, this is fine. Like I'm not having a problem with it. I haven't done a deep dive into it. You know what I'm saying? But as far as like drawing a full comic, like I've just been trying to draw a figure with Krita, and I'm like, oh, if you know Clip Studio Paint or whatever, you're going to, Krita is pretty easy to pick up. But whereas I've been a Photoshop professional for years and years, like retouching and graphic design and stuff like that, and making the weird jump from Photoshop to Clip Studio for me was like, wait, I have to kind of get back and relearn and realize that this is a drawing tool and not necessarily a design tool. Yeah, am I making any sense?
No, that makes perfect sense, because yeah. I was using Photoshop as a drawing tool, yeah. Which obviously is not what it's meant for. So that would explain why. Yeah, and I'm actually, you've hit the nail on the head right there, because like they're two different programs. One's an editing tool. One's an art tool.
Yeah.
And you know, one's a drawing tool and stuff. Yeah, yeah. I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah. No. So for me, what I'm interested in is, because you know, for my own comic that I do, you know, in my spare time and stuff. Not necessarily, you know, again, part-time fanboy. I have, you know, other things going on, but, you know, I will work in pencil first. And then what I would love to do if I had all the time in the world, I would do like full tight pencils, right? Like for, and then I would go in ink, but I don't have time for that. I try and do light pencils and then I go over it like, you know, in ink. And I've even found myself doing that in Clip Studio Paint. Like, why not just jump to the inks instead of just doing it in pencils? Because it seems to me like you would be getting those crisp, dark lines, and Clip Studio Paint works so well that you could do that rather quickly as well, right? What's your thinking behind using the pencil tool in Clip Studio Paint versus just like jumping to an inking tool?
It's speed and efficiency, really. Because I want to do this as a professional thing, and it's because if I can demonstrate that, I can do it quickly. So, but I think it's more a case of like the things like difference, especially when it comes to digital, like the difference between like a digital pencil and a digital inking, it's kind of this. One's just basically a textured dark line. One's just, you know, so it's not really, and like you look like at the old, like the reason why we had inking to begin with was because like the reproduction of pencils was so, like it wasn't good enough. But now the chick who did Monstrous did an entire graphic novel, which is just pencils and.
I haven't read that yet. I should read that.
She Eats the Night, is it? Yeah, that's. I wasn't a massive fan of Monsters, but I really dug She Eats the Night. And then you look at, say, Beach Momoko, and it's just like they're not, you know, they're not they're watercolors, and they're, you know, and then like there was a Fighting America Stephen Pratt comic where basically they took his pencils and they darkened them up to, and then they just color underneath them. And Frank Whiteley, they don't bother inking him now because his pencils are so tight that you just raise the levels up and stuff. It's kind of like the inking was a throwback to like when printing wasn't that good. But like, you know, most but it's kind of like if you talk to cats, like you hear like cats I told McFarlane go like, well, I went from like doing really tight pencils on the Incredible Hulk to just basically skipping that and just inking over my my sketch layouts and stuff. It's like there's a need to be a process in between like your initial thumbnail sketch and the final product, kind of. But like if you can make that if you can make that step as short as possible, so like when you do your thumbnails, you then blow them up and you do a really rough sketch, and then you come on top of that. That will mean that you're not you. I mean, if you get like the terms like the values, the placements, and all this stuff, if you can get that done in the thumbnail sketch, and then kind of get the anatomy proper done in the pencils, I did air quotes pencil sketch.
Yeah.
And then you can just go on to like the final like the rendering side of things. And it's just it kind of depends on what you're aiming to do. Are you aiming to spend forever making a beautiful bit of artwork, or are you trying to make a monthly comic?
Yeah.
In which you do everything as efficiently as humanly possible.
Sure.
I'm trying to do stuff as efficiently as humanly possible because I'm not long for this world. It's, I've got, and so I only have so many amount of comics in me.
Yeah.
And I would really like to get them out of me. Yeah. And so the people go, oh, well, here's a mountain of this guy's bibliography and stuff. Didn't he do well, even though he started at it quite late and stuff. So If you give me the opportunity, I will spend forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever basically sketching this one panel, not getting anything done like a failure. Whereas they're like, nope, I need to get this done now. Now, 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 now. Otherwise, you're not going to, it's basically the good thing about, that's why it's digital pencils and color underneath it, so I can kind of be as quick, and at the end of the day, I'll have something finished quite soon.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of joy to have, here's a finished body of work. Well done. That's a success.
Yeah. I totally get what you mean. And if I could go back, I would just do straight pencils. And then and it's funny because I don't know if you've ever read a book named Amulet. Amulet is all ages. You should check it out. It's a really great book. I've interviewed that creator several years ago, a couple of times. And, we would have discussions too, because we met in person a couple of times, and he was just like, yeah, I just do pencils. I was like, what? You just do? 'Cause his artwork is astounding, but he goes into stuff with Photoshop and paints and stuff like that over it. And I was just like, wow, that's amazing. And, that's one thing that I did recently. I took some old pencil pages and started coloring them. And I was like, you know what? This looks fine. This could be fine. It's not sort of the traditional, Marvel stuff that I grew up with and stuff, or even that a lot of people are doing today. But there was a part of me that's and another realization that's come to me, especially doing interviews all these years. I mean, the colorists have just become stars. They've become such
an
important,
so much of the
they
heavy
do so
lifting.
Much of the work now. Yeah. Whereas before it was just when I was growing up, colorists, it was yeah, okay, that was just another name in the book. You know what I mean? We never realized how important they were, especially when they were doing paints or inks or whatever it was and dyes. But now it's just the colorist is so important. I mean, I've seen colorists.
I've named
bad
three
work.
Colorists. I've named up three colorists in this, yeah. About four, if you count Peach Momoko,
yeah.
In this interview, and I'm a penciler. I've only mentioned two drawers and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, and I went out of my way to find what's his name, Adam Warren. He does pencils on that.
I love him.
Yeah, he's great.
Power, yeah.
And then I went back and I looked up some. I remember in either late 90s or 2000, Joe Madura, he was just doing straight pencils, and I found some of that work and I started picking it up and I was you could totally do this. But when I was starting off in comics, starting off trying to do my own books, especially with a book called Baby Badass that I ended up not drawing. A lot of the reason I didn't draw it was because I was going to have to ink, and it just everything took so much more time. And if I had just stuck with pencils like what you were doing, maybe I would have been faster and more productive. And I'm also, I don't know if you're this way, but I just like penciling. I like pencils. And I have friends who are painters. My daughter's a painter. People love, and I was just I don't know if I just don't have the patience or what, but I just love pencils. You know what I mean? So I'm with you on that. And it's very much to the if I ever do get finished what I'm doing now and move on to another book, I'm just going to do pencils and colors and that's it. I'm done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally get that.
I completely hear you. So I know why you did it. I was just, for me, it's with digital artwork, it seems if you're going to do pencils, why not just do the ink lines? But, I totally get where you're coming from. And
I mean, it's more of a case of I'm used to doing pencils and stuff, and I'm not really quite au fait with ink lines. But it's more of a case of you know, it's just like it's more of a case I just liked the effect of this particular pencil brush, but like my yeah, it was just in the course of the experimentation. I just like the look of it, and you know, so that's you know, but like what I've done since then is I've made my own brushes that have that sort of similar sort of texture. So yeah. Like in the next from issue 3 onwards, until I get bored of them, there will be like a proper, you know, quote unquote ink line that will just have a bit more kind of a texture to it.
Sure. And so, do you really enjoy working digitally more than traditionally? Like, do you, totally. I'm assuming for commissions, like you might do traditional stuff, like, or is it all digital?
I can do traditional stuff for commissions if people want me to do traditional stuff for commissions. Gotcha. I prefer to do digital because like, it's just, I've only recently got back into drawing traditionally.
Okay.
Because like, I delved headfirst into digital, and it's like it just suits my temperament a lot better than drawing traditionally. One thing, you can zoom in and out. My eyesight's getting to the point like I can't really zoom, you know, and like it takes up less room to sit by a computer than it does to set up like the art easel and stuff. Mm. So I can do traditional commissions if people want me to, but I can also do digital ones if people want me to do that.
Gotcha. No, I totally get it. And I was actually joking around with, I think, somebody on Facebook a while ago where I was like, I was drawing something with pencil and I literally started pinching the paper to try and zoom in. And I was like, what the hell am I doing? Like, it's become that so instinctive where it's just like, you know, if I don't have the touch screen to pinch or squeeze, zoom in, I'm a little lost. So I get what you're saying with the eyesight and stuff like that. So, I mean, as far as Here Comes the Dragon Punch, you know, a lot of the things that it's inspired by are Dragon Ball Z. You said Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, I definitely caught a little Naruto in there and stuff like that. You had said that the books that you were working on were darker than this, and you kind of wanted to shift into something else. What sort of adaptations do you have to make in your own head or your own style to be able to, you know, shift from maybe adult, more adult oriented or grittier stuff to all ages kind of stuff?
I'll be honest with you, it's a simple case. I was just in a happier mood.
Okay.
I wasn't full of like kind of anger and fuck you energy when I started doing this, and it's just like this is a fun place to be, you know. And I mean, I'm kind of clamoring to delve back into more janky dark territory. That probably be the once I finish issue 3 and 4, I might go back to the well with 13 shots of whiskey or do something really, really, really dark. Or I might just continue with Here Comes the Dragon Punch. But like, it's just more a case of like, there's always been some humor in my work and everything. And it's just like, instead of it being like kind of like really bleak, opaque humor, it's a case of, well, let's just have a bit more lighter humor and everything. So
sure.
And it's just like, instead of being like kind of, it just, because, you know, having a few kind of stock archetypes that I work with and stuff. And so, you know, I haven't been really playing with like kind of the big kind of manic energy ball kind of characters for a while. So I said, well, just play with these cats for a while and you can kind of integrate the kind of more of the somber ones in. And, you know, just those, I don't remember it being that much of a seismic gear shift to go from one style to the other because maybe it's because like there was a sizable gap between 13 shots of whiskey, the container breach thing, and I did a whole bunch of like a Marvel fan scene kind of thing, which was a lot more kind of lighter and happier and stuff. So like maybe that's kind of helped gear me, guide me towards being like, well, you can do kind of more lighter stuff here and everything. And then, and I think I did, so I think that's it. So I think it's just a case of like, it wasn't like a half penny town. It's like, nope, I'm gradually going into this.
Gotcha. And so, what is it about like the ninjas and the fighting and the kung fu stuff that really kind of like sucked you in? Is that something you've been a fan of for a long time? I mean, because to me, it seems like Here Comes the Dragon Punch is very different than what you were doing before. Like, what was it that inspired you to sort of do this? Were you going through a phase where you were like, oh, this is what I want to draw? Did you rediscover stuff? Was it just always part of like your DNA? Like, what was it that inspired you to do, you know, like a Dragon Ball Z type book?
I mean, pretty much everything you just said. It's kind of,
I answered my own question, is what you're saying?
You sort of did. I mean, basically, the initial idea for Here Comes the Dragon Punch was like it was going to be a fan comic, and I thought, well, I could do that, or I could create my own thing and go from there. I recently rediscovered my absolute love for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I would like to draw one of them comics professionally before I shuffle off this mortal. But, well, might as well, you know, it's like, well, and it's just like, kind of, I quite like drawing these things. I can't really explain it other than the fact, like, it's just like, like kung fu and anime and violence and fighting has always been like a thing I've been into and stuff. It's just, you know, this is a story that I felt I wanted to tell. I want to tell now and stuff. And it's like, cause like you can, like the whole, you can tell other stories behind the whole, behind the fighting sports drama of it and stuff. Well, you know, like Powerballs and stuff. And I was like, well, you know, so yeah, it was just more of a case of something I've always been a fan of, and I just wanted to delve into it, you know?
Sure. No, that's cool. I mean, was it...
I don't know if I actually answered your question properly. Do you want to ask me again? But like, I'll try to answer it.
I think that's fine. What you said is fine. I mean, it's totally fine. Like, as far as like kung fu movies, like what sort of stuff were you exposed to when you were younger? I mean, anything stick out to you, or was it just action movies in general?
So action movies in general, but like a massive Bruce Lee fan, massive Jackie Chan fan. When I was a wee lad, I used to watch quite a lot of kung fu Hong Kong cinema and stuff. But basically my wife is dyslexic, so like reading stuff with subtitles is kind of goes out the window because John Wick came out The Matrix and Keanu Reeves over and all these kind of what's that one that was on Netflix with the chick from Harley Quinn?
The chick from
Kate came out. I wasn't Harley Quinn.
Oh, Kate. That was a good movie.
That was a very good movie. They also do subtitles really well by not having just basically white text on front of a white background. You know, that could be a lesson to everybody, because there's, you know, I mean, not going to side tangent, but the subtitles are fucking terrible. Essentially, they are the cheapest thing to do to translate, and if they can't be bothered to dub something, they can't be bothered to subtitle it properly. Oh. You could just look at when someone just takes a bit of care and attention to how you subtitle something. That means that the text that needs to be there for you to see, to read, is one, not in the way of the action that you're meant to be looking at, but also visible so you can see it against the backdrop and the background. Anyway, that's one of the reasons why Kate is fantastic. So yeah. There's a whole bunch of these movies that came out recently where it's like, instead of just being like, kind of like, oh, we're doing jump cuts all over the place, like, just to hide the fact that our actors can't do actions. Like, you know what? We're going to train these actors to do action so we can have the camera on them and stuff. And it seemed like some of the guys who did Deadpool and John Wick and all that thing was like, we are stunt people making cinema.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, oh, that's just cool. So that's sort of what was going with as well. Just like kind of like, this, you know, there's a lot of, you know, this is a, like, as a medium, comic books are excellent. And it's because of how can I use this and to tell, and yeah, just basically, yeah. So like, it's just the fact that there's a lot of kind of like action, like kind of like stuff that had come out, and you know, so that's where that came from as well.
Sure, sure.
Just, now, just the love of depicting action clearly so everybody can see it, I guess, is where I was going with that as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let me ask you, you know, kind of like as we're sort of nearing the end of this, and I, you know, I appreciate your time. You know, thank you for joining me.
I hope I haven't been too rambly.
Well, no, no, you're fine. You're good. That's what people want to hear, people talk on podcasts. That's why I never have a problem with the chatty guest. It's totally fine with me. Talk to me about your style, because that's one of the things that intrigued me when I saw your style. I was like, oh, it's very different. Like the way you draw your heads is a little different. I mean, it seems anime, manga inspired in a way, but it's not at the same time. It's very much like of its own, you know, inspiration, its own sort of like thing. Talk to me a little bit about who or what artists have inspired you. I mean, you mentioned the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles a little bit. You did mention Frank Miller a little bit in the beginning. Like, what are some of the things that influenced the style for Here Comes the Dragon Punch? Because, yeah, I mean, that was one of the things when you sent me an email, I was like, oh, okay, like, I like the way this kind of looks. Like, I like the style. Can you talk to me about the development of your artistic style?
Well, basically, back in, I mean, obviously, manga and anime is really runs deep through my entire core and stuff, and cartoons doesn't. But like, you mentioned cats like Jeremiah Rivera and Adam Warren, and who I love with my whole heart and soul, and Chris Pachalo and Humberto Ramos and stuff. And I don't know if you remember back in the was it be early to late 90s, early 2000s when the manga influence was coming over here.
Oh, there I remember.
A wizard coined a phrase called pseudo manga, and that's basically so like I. And like all that was the Marvel DC. I don't know if it was DC because it must have a DC head. That was the Marvel house style for a while. That kind of pseudo manga kind of thing. It was like so growing up reading comics that looked like that had a big impact on me. And then I was reading when I left comics and then came back to comics, that was the kind of style that kind of resonated with me more, that kind of like that throwback to like that kind of late 90s, early 2000s manga anime style. And then essentially my style came out from the fact that like I can only do what comes out of my hand and stuff. So it's like trying to wrangle it in and just, yeah, a lifetime of watching anime, watching Disney, watching anime inspired cartoons and anime inspired comics has led me to my current style, where it's like I'm you know wearing my anime influence quite heavily on my sleeve, which is appropriate for basically a British Shonen Jump manga. So you know.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. I'm trying to think of the guy. Who was the guy that was big in the 90s? Like he was doing like he did his own kind of like manga stuff and he did stuff for Marvel. It was like Ben
Scotty something. Young?
Well, no, not Scotty. No. Scotty Young is great. Like
Scotty Young is awesome.
I'm a massive fan of like his, I collect like the little figures that they, you know, the little statues and stuff. I've got way too many of them, but no, it was a guy in the 90s. It's Ben something, and I can't remember what it was. He did like the Marvel Mangaverse or something like that. Like right when Marvel was trying to.
You know what I'm talking Ninja about? Ninja High School.
What's that?
Ninja
yeah,
High School.
I think that's it. What's the guy's name? Oh my God, I can't remember.
See, that kind of manga style isn't really my bag.
No, me neither. Me neither.
But
me
like,
neither.
I can see. But it's interesting to get because obviously
Ben Dunn. Just found
that's it, yes. Because you only know what you know and everything, but it's like that's how like because obviously to me like the first manga and anime incursion was Pokemon and stuff, and nothing had come before. But then you look back and there's of, well, obviously Ulysses 31 was around forever, and you know, so it was interesting to see. I mean, it's he's cool because like, I mean, his style isn't my bag, but it's interesting to see how he goes from like taking that initial influence, and obviously he's reading 70s manga, which isn't really what cats like Adam Warren were cribbing from when he started doing his style. It's just like, oh, I see how people kind of and now it's so ubiquitous that like it's got to look at anything on like on webtoons, and it's basically like a softer version of Ben Dunn. We've kind of gone back the other way.
Yeah. It's so funny. I remember I used to buy some of Ben Dunn's stuff, and then it was like there, but didn't quite hit it for me. You know what I'm saying? And then with the anime explosion and, you know, manga stuff that happened in the 90s, it was just like, oh, I'm getting the real thing. So like, why, you know, drift over to that? But yeah, no, I very much remember the manga anime explosion in the like mid to late 90s, early aughts. And yeah, I bought all that. I bought tons of that stuff. And it was just such great value. $10 and you got like a full book. It was just like, are you kidding me? And then, you know, if you went to Borders was a bookstore, they gave you like a 20% off coupon and you were like, bam, $8, ready to roll. You know what I mean? So yeah, so it's interesting the people that have been, how cyclical everything really becomes. And you're talking like going back the other way. Because it's funny because, I mean, I know like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I think people like thought that was kind of inspired by that, but I think it's like more Daredevil and stuff like that. Like, so
I think they're concurrent with each other, but I personally, as much as the original Teenage Mutant Turtles is kind of a rough and ready kind of thing, I don't see a great deal of, like Ben Dunn's stuff in there. I see more Frank Miller, and I see more
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you. As a matter of fact, I've talked about this on the podcast before. I actually picked up Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like, was not something I picked up initially, like when they first came out. I remember picking up an issue and just being like, you know, this is a little, you know, I was young and kind of like more into like what's colorful and stuff like that. So it was, and then recently, a couple years ago, I picked up one of the hardcover collections. I was like, all right, let me try this. Let me see. And I opened it and I was like, oh, I did not like the artwork initially. I was like, oh, what did I, but then I started reading it and I was like, oh, this is a lot of fun. Like, this is, it's different. I mean, you know, now it's been cloned so many times, but you know, at the time it came out, it just must have been like a ray of just like, you know, wow, what is this? You know, so it's interesting how, yeah, things can sort of like grab you in different ways, at least, in, you know, and be inspired from different things. So yeah, I totally
And also with the initial Eastman and Laird run of Teenage Mutant Turtles, that artwork is so unrefined that you could easily mimic that. That's probably why manga and stuff took off so well over here, because it is something that you could easily mimic, where like you can't mimic Joe Madureira. That man's just a fucking god amongst us all, you know, like, and it's just like, oh, it will birth like a thousand like kind of like Rob Liefeld, you know, as much as people dunk on that man, like his artwork is good, but not so good that you can't do it yourself.
I don't know if good is, I don't know that I would agree with good, but I think
he's kind of like a punk rock kind of thing. It's like, he has his jaggy edges, but like, you know, you can see how like it would, you know, it would be easier for you to clone a Rob Liefeld.
Yes, yes. No, that I will agree with.
Like Jim Lee.
I will agree with the fact that you can look at something by Rob Liefeld and it can inspire you to be like, I can maybe do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I
guess when he doesn't try, when he tries, he's actually, when he actually tries, like really, really tries, he's actually generally quite good. But like when he's just kind of coasting, it's guessing, like, it's, you know, it is what it is. But then again, like he made like loads of money just by coasting.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, he seems like a genuinely nice person and like interview. I've seen him at conventions and stuff. And like, that's the thing is, I don't like dunking on him too much, you know, but there is a lot of me where I'm just like, I look at some of the stuff he does and I'm just like, wow, you got away with a lot.
you got away with a lot,
you know?
Most people say they got to do like a 1,000 pages of bad artwork before they get to the first good one and stuff.
Yeah.
It would appear that geezer never got, it was like maybe like a third of the way through his 1,000 bad pages and stuff. So, you know, it's,
well, I think what happens for some artists is you get your success early and it's like, this is fine.
Yeah, he was only like 20 or something like that.
And you don't develop.
I hang out with NWA, so who the fuck are we going to say anything?
Yeah, no, exactly. No, I mean, for me, it's mostly like, that's great. Like, you were successful with what you did and you know, I can't bash that. You know, he's worth more money. You know, he can buy John Byrne originals. You know what I'm saying? Like, so... like, that's the thing. But at this, you know, but I also feel that there are artists who are like, this is fine. You know, I don't need to grow anymore. So,
yeah.
But in any case, well, you know, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I really appreciate your time. Let's, any final words on Here Comes the Dragon Punch?
Yeah. So, depending when this goes out, I should have asked you at the beginning, but I didn't. Basically, issue 2 will be out. We're in this. It's the 16th. Be launched next Friday, which will be what, the 22nd.
Okay. Cool.
I can look at a calendar. 2 seconds.
Sure. I mean, today's the 16th. So if it's this Friday, it'll be the 21st.
The 21st. Chapter 1 of issue 2 will be released on Webtoons, Substack, and my art station on the 21st. The full issue plus some back, some behind the scenes shenanigans will be released on the Patreon at that time, as well as an Etsy, which a digital copy, which won't have the backyard shenanigans, but will have some additional artwork in it. And basically, from that, I'm attending a Comic Con in Cumbria.
Oh, nice.
On the 31st of September, and in between then I'm going to basically power through and write and draw the next 2 issues, which will then be collected in a like a tankerbond thing. So hopefully by the 31st of September, if you're in Cumbria and at the Lakes Art Festival, you'll be able to buy the first 4 issues plus some additional stuff of Here Comes the Dragon Punch. And because that's my plan, is to release them digitally and then kind of collect stuff in like 4 issue tankerbond kind of things.
Sure. No,
if you want to support the comic and or support me or make me feel like you want it to continue, each issue will be it's like £3 on the Patreon to basically, and you'll get you'll get the full issue plus some behind the scenes stuff on the Patreon, which is patreon.com Marcus Pan.
Nice.
Also, my commissions are open. And if you like, I like your artwork, stop drawing that Here Comes the Dragon Punch, and here's a comic book that you can draw that will get paid or pay you handsomely to draw. I will drop this like a cold sack of shit, and I will draw your comic for you if you need me to.
That's great.
Not precious.
And that's Marcus with a K and Pattern Marcus with 2 T's, right?
Yes.
And on Instagram, you're Marcus_pattern_draws.
I am indeed. Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate you coming on. I love talking to guests from across the pond. So I realize it may have been an effort to line up times with me here in Los Angeles.
It's fine. It's just the fact that I literally just got back from work.
Yeah.
So, you know.
No, I understand. Yeah. But I appreciate your time. And again, the book is called Here Comes the Dragon Punch. It's on Webtoons. Please check it out. Looks like a very fun book. My name is Christian Horn. This has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on our website, parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are still on Facebook. We are still on Instagram. trying to figure out the thread situation, trying to figure out Blue Sky. Don't know that I want to even jump into more social media. Have we not learned from Twitter, people? Have we not learned? Anyway, yeah, feel free to check out Here Comes the Dragon Punch. Please support Marcus's work. Thank you for listening, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Hard time, sad boy.